Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello, it's the Anfield Wrap. It's John Givens hosting this week, and I'm joined by Ian Salmon, by Josh Sexton, and by Ian Ryan. And I normally do the post-match show, which is normally euphoric, very raw. This one's normally a little bit more measured, but Ian Ryan, I mean, I'm still right up there, mate. I don't know about you.
Oh, mate, where to start with that? I mean, of all the ways to win a football match, no one is picking that way. It's a possible option. I mean, John, if you think about before the game at Old Trafford, and you go into United, for instance, and if someone had said, going into that game, you're going to score four goals, you're going to go and win at a ground where you've struggled in recent times, and you're going to do it with a partnership of Reece Williams and Nat Phillips, you're like, nah, mate, not having that. Not having that? Well, guess what's happening in the next game? You're just going to slot the 95th minute winner with his head. And, I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable to win a game in such a manner. And as I say, I think we were chatting before we started the show, I think most of us are still trying to process what happened, because I mean, for Alisson to go up and do that, I mean, I actually thought at first it must have been Phillips, because Phillips makes that run across him. And to even get that connection with the fact that the man's gone in front of him, it's some finish, John. And as I say, it just feels like now Liverpool have got the momentum to take into these last two big games.
Yeah, it is some finish, Ian. And, you know, he's the first goalkeeper to score in our history. We've done a lot in our history, done a lot of crazy stuff, done a lot of amazing stuff, but a goalkeeper's never scored. I mean, it's some way to mark that.
It's incredible. I was on our WhatsApp group with our kid and me mates, and I just got to the point where I'd literally just put up a message, we've run out of ideas again, haven't we? And I was like, oh, there's a new one. That's definitely a we've not tried that one before. It was unreal. I think there's not been a lot in the last 18 months that's genuinely made me feel alive. It's been such a down, dull period where all you've done is basically exist from day to day to day to hope that we get a real world back at some point. And that was the first moment in 18 months that's genuinely made my heart actually leap. I've never seen anything like that. I've seen goalies try it before. I've seen goalies scramble before. I've been in the ground. I was at Goodison when Tim Howard scored against Bolton in an absolute dog of a game, which the goal didn't count because they lost anyway. And it was carried by the wind because they're in the middle of a hurricane. But to see a goalie come up, be so present, see a corner that's so perfect after apparently 151 corners this year so far that we haven't scored from since the last time we scored from a corner. After 151 wasted corners, to see a corner drop that perfectly. And I swear to God, I don't believe Trent was putting in a space. I believe he was putting on Alisson's head. And I believe he knew exactly where he was aiming for. And to see him score with what is, for anybody, a world-class header. You don't get headers much more perfect than that. Across the goalie into the side net. And then, obviously, to see his reaction. There's not many times football reduces me nearly to tears. But that one, to see him sobbing his heart out. As was said, this is how wordless I am. Said on the pink, this is the kind of thing that nobody else does. And we seem to do it all the time. It's usually, you know, Origi's goal against Everton, Origi's goal against Barcelona, Lovren's header against Dortmund, Gary Mack against Alavaz. All these things that don't happen to people happen to us. And then we crown it by going, well, there's this lad who's got you into the Champions League final already with a save against Napoli. He saved in the Champions League final in the second half with a string of superlative saves nobody even spoke about. And now he's doing this after having a bit of a ropey season and obviously a family tragedy that's affected him. He's doing this for you. It's kind of like there couldn't be a better person to score it, and there couldn't be a better way to feel about the end of a football game.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal story, whichever way you think about it, Josh. You know, you can think about it in terms of, you know, what it means for the team. You can think about it in terms of, you know, making history, as I said, for Liverpool. And then you can think about the 12 months, 6 months that he's had, you know, everything that he's done for the football team, as Ian quite rightly points out there, up to this moment. you know, doing it in the most unlikely way. You know, every aspect of this story just fills your heart with joy.
Yeah, you just couldn't be any more made up from if you tried, really, could you? And it was really interesting watching his interview after, obviously very, very emotional as well, but he mentioned that he'd like been away from interviews and he not really wanted to talk about it because it makes him too emotional. And you saw that obviously the emotional outpouring after the game there, but you almost saw a bit of a weight lifted off him during the interview as well. It was like he was ready to open up about this sort of experience of the last 12 months, because, you know, I think Neil said it to Jurgen Klopp in the interview he did there, that we treat these players like they're our dads, but they're young lads, the lads in their mid to late 20s, some early 20s in some cases, and even younger in this Liverpool side at the moment. And Alisson is someone who's experienced tragedy that I can't even, you know, imagine having to go through. So to do that and to sort of, you know, maintain his faith throughout this last few months. He's obviously just had a baby coming to the world as well. So that's a massive thing for him to go through another really emotional time in a good way, obviously. And then to get that moment yesterday. And like Ian said, we have this thing as Liverpool fans. And obviously one of the slogans we always use is we see things they'll never see. Mm. And genuinely, like, I'd be surprised if there's any other football club who does the improbable more than Liverpool do, because it feels like every which way you see Liverpool, you know, making it hard for themselves, and that's like, oh, it's typical Liverpool, they're you know, leaving it to the last and stuff like that. The ways in which we actually pull it out of the fire, it's not just that we pull it out of the fire, it's the ways in which we do it. It's absolutely obscene, to be honest.
And it's, I'll say again, well, I think it all worth saying again, it's some finish. Like, it's not like a scrappy one off his shoulder, and it's not like it, you know, just one that's bouncing around and gets bundled in. It's genuinely one of the best headers I've ever seen.
I mean, you have seen goalkeepers go before and kind of, you know, nick one. You know, I think Schmeichel did one, but I remember being quite scrappy. Maybe it kind of comes off the shoulder or something, but it's a kind of finish that you think he must be practicing that all the time, because how the fuck's he done it? Yeah. I mean, it's a pressure moment, and, you know, as I said before, he's got lads running across him as well. So even the finest footballers, you know, strikers whose job it is to do that, could be put off by someone as big as fucking Nat Phillips with his head running in front of you, do you know what I mean? You're well within your rights to get that wrong, but he doesn't. And, you know, maybe it is a little bit written in the stars, John, because, you know, we've had this season that's just been a bit of a car crash, let's be honest. It's all over the place, you know, the injuries, the decisions, and I know teams will go, oh, well, we've had those decisions as well, and maybe they have, but when you've got the amount of players missing that Liverpool had yesterday, I mean, it was virtually a full 11 that was just out, and it's every game now you're thinking, well, who's out this week? You know, we had the postponements against United, and the game after, we've got four lads missing. You're thinking, what the fuck's happened there? And what are they doing in training? Four lads out. And then obviously you had the news before the game yesterday where Jota's now out for the season, and obviously it's only three games, but it's still another player who can affect football matches, who all of a sudden is taken out, and you've got this situation at the back that you're managing, which is not easy. You know, you've seen Nat Phillips and Reece Williams perform really well in kind of recent weeks above their level, but let's be honest, we all know it's probably a little bit above their level in terms of what they're doing, and they've got through another game yesterday, but to win it like that, I mean, if you're in that dressing room afterwards, I mean, I think what was great for me, before you get to the dressing room bit, was just the reaction on so many players' faces. So you see Mohamed Salah, and he just can't quite believe what's happened. Fabinho's face is an absolute picture, and you've got Trent who's put the corner in, and he's just looking like, this can't be happening. This just can't be happening. And yet it is happening. And I think, you know, going into these last two now, it puts us in a really strong position. And the last two, they have to mean something now. Liverpool are going to go and deliver again twice, because that goal just can't be one of those goals that you forget about and it falls by the wayside, because it eventually means nothing. You know, like Ian said before, the Tim Howard one, this has to mean something. And I think collectively now, that will just galvanise them to go again for two massive football matches on the horizon.
Yeah, you'd certainly hope so. Just a bit more on the goal and on the delivery, Ian. It comes from Trent Alexander-Arnold, who's a player who's stepped up repeatedly recently. You know, you think about his late winner against Aston Villa this time. It's a late provider. It's some cross. There's a story from David Ornstein, friend of the Anfield Rap in The Athletic this morning, that apparently Trent isn't going to make the England squad. If England have got 26 players better than him, then they should be odds on to win this tournament, because that boy is phenomenal and his performance has recently been phenomenal. But what he does at big moments in games, how he steps up at such a young age is something else.
Yeah, you've got Danny Murphy and Micah Richards last night on Match of the Day. talking about the fact that Trent has to go because he's a right back who can win you games, and we haven't got that. And I say we, I'm not talking about England as we, I'm not asked by England, I really couldn't give a shit about what England do. That's one way I went. This is one of the swearing programmes, isn't it? Okay, you have to cut that out. I couldn't care less about England. I'm really not bothered about what they do. If Trent doesn't go to the Euros, I won't be bothered for me, because it's one of our players having a summer off and having a rest who needs it. The lad himself might want to represent his country. He might want to get the top honours. Or, personally, you know, obviously I'm old enough to be Trent's dad. If it was my lad and he had a chance of going away in the Euros this summer with England after the manager dropped him when he was already in an upswing in his performance for the season, to be dropped in those circumstances, to be kind of scapegoated for a manager who hasn't been able to do the job at Aston Villa, Middlesbrough, somebody else that isn't important, three teams that aren't particularly good, he's managed to get up to the job of being the England manager because there are very few other candidates and he was already within the organisation. England are going to get to the quarterfinals and then get knocked out by the first decent team that they play in a knockout round. Why waste your time going away with England? But if they've got 26 players who, and they say you're not taking 23, it's up to 26. What, you've been given another three and you're still not taking this lad? Who do you think you're taking? This is, Gareth Southgate is not good enough to win things. If Gareth Southgate can't see the value in taking Trent Alexander-Arnold to the Euros, he's not a capable manager. Because if you can look at talents of that level and look at the balls he can put in and the space he can make on midfield, and you think, I'm going to take these three right-backs instead. It's kind of like, well, he's the best right-back in Europe and you found three English right-backs who are better than him. Oh, sod England.
What I don't get, Josh, is that when I've watched England in the past, it feels like, you know, the bigger the moments, there's not enough people stepping up and they've gone out of tournaments, you know, at a bit of a whimper, really. And then you've got this lad who just rises to every occasion. You know, I'm not just talking about, you know, yesterday with obviously his great delivery. It's all the time. Even think back to the Champions League final in Kiev where everyone's like, oh, you know, he's the weak link and he ends up being our best player. Do you know what I mean? He consistently performs when it matters most. And, you know, it's not just England who are short of players like that. World football short of players like that.
Yeah, and I think it's important that Ian mentioned before that, look, we can look at this from a selfish point of view, and it was a bit bittersweet being on social media the other week when Virgil van Dijk had obviously revealed that he wasn't going to go to the Euros or Holland and was going to focus on making pre-season with Liverpool. And obviously we as Liverpool fans, to a degree, want to celebrate that because, you're giving this player every chance to be fit for Liverpool's pre-season. He's not going to go away with Holland and have any chance of, you know, re-aggravating his injury and things like that. But you also saw in van Dijk how genuinely gutted he was to not be able to go to this tournament and represent his country and captain his country in his case as well. So for you know, to miss out on injury is one thing, to know that the injury is the reason you're not going, but then for Trent to look back at what he's done, you know, in the second half of the season in particular, because I think he's been one of Liverpool's best players, if not Liverpool's best player, for him to look back and say, well, you know, what is the reason I didn't make this tournament, it's a bit sickening, to be honest. And I hope Trent realises how important he is to us, and you know he should do. He's literally painted on the side of a house in Anfield. but I want, you know, the 10,000 who are going to be in Anfield on the last game of the season, we need to show Trent Alexander-Arnold now how much he does mean to us, because you know he is our lad and he is our boy, and you know he might not be England's boy anymore if that's the way that they're going to treat him, because like I say, he has every reason. He's given every bit of proof you need to go, like you say, the big moments. He's got loads of them. He has another one yesterday. It's only the second best corner he's ever taken in his Liverpool career as well to get a winning goal. So it's obscene. It says everything about England. It says everything about Gareth Southgate. But as I say, Trent is ours, and we just need to show him how important he is to us.
If he's not going, he's not going because the manager isn't tactically astute enough to know how to use him properly. And if I was Trent, I would be sitting there going, Jim, call me up. You know what, I'm not bothered. It's okay. I've actually retired from international football because I'm not being treated like this.
But realistically, he'd be desperate to go. And he should be going, because regardless of what we think about international football, you know, these players, they want to represent the country because he will
have an age group, so you want to go upwards, don't you?
But he should be going. I mean, there's absolutely no reason why Trent Alexander-Arnold shouldn't be going in the summer. It says more about Gareth Southgate than it does about Trent, let's be honest. You know, this thing, this narrative around him, you know, not being great defensively. I mean, it's an area of his game that's improved massively. Now, don't get me wrong.
I saw that yesterday as well.
On the cover, he's been brilliant for a long time now. Certainly this season, you've seen a massive improvement in Trent on the cover. I think there are times where his one-on-one defending, maybe he could do a little bit better, but he's still a young footballer. But let's not pretend like all these other right-backs are doing something perfect every single week. Kyle Walker at the weekend, giving another penalty away. How many times has Kyle Walker give penalties away? He did it against us. There must be three or four occasions where he's not switched on enough, or he gets too close to his man and bundles them over. Don't try and tell me Kieran Trippier is a better fullback than Trent Alexander-Arnold. It's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. The guy can do things with a football that most can only dream of. He's at an age, what is he, 21, 22, where he's pretty much won everything there is to win. Champions League, he's appeared in two finals, he's got the Premier League under his belt. It's bizarre. It's more than bizarre that a footballer of that ability is considered not good enough for this country when he's doing the things he can do with a football. You see it at Old Trafford, some of the passes. And again yesterday, it's absolutely insane that he's got that vision in his locker to be able to deliver balls like that. The one for Salah yesterday, actually, where Mo does get his shot off, but it's just a little bit too close to Johnson. It's a brilliant ball. It's an unbelievable ball. And he's got that in his locker. And yes, he has had maybe one or two tough spells this season, but lots of other players have as well. Yeah. But I agree with Josh. The last 2 months, 3 months, he's been absolutely superb. He's been one of Liverpool's standout performers. He was again yesterday. Mm. And again, you know, he could have won that match for us before it actually happens, before the corner. He cuts inside on his left foot. It's a little bit unlucky. Maybe a little bit of an adrenaline rush. But as I say, if he's not going to the Euros, if England are going to find two or three right-backs better than him, then fucking hell, there must be some players. But we know they're not. We know they're not that level. It's a truly bizarre decision, John, if that's what happens.
It's finding two or three footballers better than him because the balls he delivers are Beckham-esque.
The ones
are probably
Salah,
better than Beckham.
The Salah that's first half, isn't it? With Salah, you know, just can't quite get it out of his feet. But it's just absolutely perfect. And he's got that in him. And we saw that plenty of times yesterday. But we shall see. We shall see. Maybe our friend David's jumping the gun slightly, but he's normally correct on these things. You know, we talk about a match-winning performance. Man of the match goes to Thiago. He might have changed his mind here as he gave it after the game, but obviously the rest of the room before. But Thiago's worthy of it. And to be fair, he's been brilliant ever since that blue nose at the BBC called him rubbish, so maybe we need to send him some flowers. But he's been great the last few games, and he was terrific again yesterday.
He's been incredible. You know, the Man United game, I kind of missed out on how everybody was talking about how incredible Trent was, because I was just having the time of my life watching Thiago play football. And it was the one thing I was concentrating on, because I thought, that's a lad who's running the game. And you're now seeing a Liverpool side that is in the right shape for Thiago to do the job that he was actually brought in for, with Fabinho sitting there holding as he should have. And obviously, yesterday, Curtis playing the Wijnaldum role just to keep possession, but just to give Thiago the space to wander wherever he wants and play the balls that other players aren't necessarily expecting. See, the vision he's got of what's going on around him is absolutely impeccable. He played yesterday, and he played against United the way we saw him play in the Champions League final last season for Bayern. And that kind of level of, I'm just going to take this game over and everyone's going to do what I want them to do. Because he's talking all the time. He was leading on the pitch, and it just gives you hope of what we're going to see next season with him. Because it's that old form is temporary, class is permanent. He is one of the world's best midfielders. That's the top and bottom of it. And he's showing it at the moment. And it's a great time to be showing it, because if you can run a game like that, you're going to a hell of a lot of good for us.
Yeah, you can see him adapting all the time, Josh, and at first, you know, at times he looked a little bit too eager. Yesterday, he's winning more tackles than any other Liverpool player. His defensive work's great. He's winning a lot of headers as well, which is no mean feat. When West Brom at all Giants, he seems to have embraced the fight in a positive way. And as I say, it was a first. It was a little bit of a charging round, like a sort of bull in a china shop. And you know, his odds on first bookings and stuff like that. Whereas now, you know, you're seeing he's adapting all the time. As I say, he's learning what he can and can't get away with, maybe, but he's just bossing football games in every sense.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? Because the one thing that I sort of thought Thiago would definitely bring to the Liverpool side was reading of the game. And I'm sort of pleased that you've mentioned the ball in the china shop thing at first, because I think it was like he was reading a different game to what like most of the Liverpool players were reading. But I think that's, you know, because he is on this sort of superior wavelength, and Liverpool were in a pretty rubbish situation before. But you just felt like he was the most likely yesterday for a very long period towards the end of the game. It was almost like people were just sort of seeding to to Thiago because they were expecting him to either create something or to get enough space for the shot himself, because you see the way that he just terrifies opposition players around him. There were so many times where West Brom would just back off because they're just trying to block the passing lane, because they're like, honestly, this lad could just put it anywhere on a sixpence and then Liverpool have a goal. But then every time they did, he was having a shot and making the keeper make a save. Carragher mentioned the headers thing, didn't he? And it got me thinking, because I was like, it's not something you'd ever associate with Thiago's game. He's a pretty, you know, small lad on the pitch. He doesn't look like he's got much of a leap in him. But I think that again is just the reading of the game. It's reading at what time the ball's going to come. There's obviously athleticism there to actually get up to it, like you say, over some of those giants that West Brom have. But it just makes you excited. It makes you excited for sort of what's to come next season from him in this Liverpool midfield, when he's got, you know, the proper back four in front of him in terms of, you know, Joe Gomez and Virgil van Dijk being there at centre-half, when he's got, you know, Henderson and Fabinho alongside him as well. It just sort of, it's a mouth-watering prospect for Liverpool, because there's so much more he can do and achieve at this football club, and it's hard not to get excited about him, really.
Yeah, he's a lovely footballer to watch, Ian, and you can see how effective he is as well. And sometimes you can think, oh, is it all, you know, just sort of nice to watch? But yesterday, when you see the stats come up, the sky sort of throw up, he's creating more chances than everyone else. You know, as I said before, he's winning more tackles. And so it's not just nice on the eye, it's really, really effective for the team, what he's doing as well.
Yeah, there'll be some people who are embarrassed, I think, about some of the comments they made about Thiago earlier in the season. No, I think if you just watched that Chelsea game, the Everton game where he appears, there was enough in there to kind of give you, to get you excited, I suppose. And even if you'd watch Bayern Munich casually, there was enough there to kind of inform me that this is a world-class footballer. And as Josh said, you know, he's come into a side that's just been chopped and changed. You know, you've seen the difference when you've shifted Fabinho out of defence and you've put him next to Thiago, because it gives him a little bit more licence. But he is just a joy to watch on the eye. But I think one of the things that always impresses me, and it's kind of summed up in Jürgen's post-match comments, is the patience. He doesn't rush anything. And I think the easiest thing to do yesterday was to kind of lump it forward, because you're chasing that goal. And Jürgen talked about it at the end of the game, and he says, you know, one of the things that pleased him the most was no one went out and just clattered someone or got frustrated or doing anything silly. And I think a lot of that just, it almost stems from Thiago. I think he has that influence on a football team where it is calm, it is collected, it is cool at all times. He doesn't panic, he's never flustered, and he makes the right decision 9 times out of 10 when you watch him play football. And as I say, he's got all the kind of tricks in his locker, short pass, long pass, you know, he can drop it on someone's toe. He's just a brilliant, brilliant footballer to watch, John. And Liverpool are lucky to have him. And I think next season you will absolutely get to see the best of Thiago, because hopefully he'll have those players that Josh mentioned there kind of behind him and around him on a more of a consistent basis. And let's be honest, you know, you know, Jürgen's talked about it, we've talked about it. He has come into a new country. He's got to settle. He's got to try and settle. He's got to try and build those relationships.
Well, I thought, Ian, sorry to cut across here, one of the most interesting things of the interview that we did with Jürgen, and more specifically Neil did with Jürgen, where he talked about players coming in and just saying normally they'd bond off the pitch and normally they'd have the time together and things like that. And I hadn't even thought about that. You know, you thought, well, they're in the dressing room together. But he's like, well, no, we're all having to distance. Yeah. You know what I mean? And then normally, obviously, you know, you think with his Brazilian background, he'd have been going to round to Ali's for a barbecue and all that. And they haven't had any of that, really. And I can't think of really any player who's signed for a new club last summer who's tore it up. And it says something, doesn't it?
It's a good point. And no, he's not alone in this. There's other footballers as well who have had similar challenges. You know, we think about Minamino's time when he arrives at the club, and I know right in the middle of the pandemic, it must have been horrific to try and get used to a new country, a new city, with all that going on around you. But I think, you know, if you're a player in that dressing room and Thiago walks in the door, you should be absolutely delighted, because you can learn from that footballer, because he's done everything. There's nothing he hasn't done. He's been there and won it. And I think, you know, you will start to see him hopefully settle, because as you just mentioned there, John, you know, regardless of whether it's football or not, if you're starting a new job in any workplace, one of the first things you want to do is kind of, you know, build friendships, bonds, relationships, all that kind of stuff. And that's suddenly taken away from you, and you've got to then try and settle into this team that's just been absolutely decimated from day one. You know, anyone expecting to see the Bayern Munich version, no, I think, you know, you were jumping the gun a little bit. There had to be a little bit of time for this footballer to settle. And as I say, with the shift of Fabinho, I think it does release the shackles a little bit. He has got to worry as much about what's in behind him, because Fabinho's so good at screening the back four. So yeah, I think next season, as fans, we should be massively excited about what's to come.
Yeah, massively. There was a stat knocking around last night here, which said Fabinho and Thiago have started 7 games together in midfield. They were 1-6, drawn 1 of those. And, you know, we could talk about a little bit about, you know, well, maybe should that midfield have been played together more. And I do want to talk about the centre-halves in particular in the second half of this show. But, you know, regardless of decisions that have been made in the past, as Ian says, it should get you excited for the future. We've got Jordan Henderson to throw back in there as well, hopefully after a good pre-season. You know, hopefully a couple of other midfield options he were able to step up. It does get you excited for what could come next year.
Oh, completely. I think, you know, this season is going to be seen as an outlier. It's going to be, if we finish top four, if we win these next 2 games, now, you know, it is back to the old, we've got 2 cup finals. If we win these 2 games, we're back in the Champions League, and that is, I did a show, I think, about 3 weeks ago. I think it was a team talk when I said, well, look, the top four are over now. Yeah. Well, I was clearly shite on it. I'm talking absolute shite. The top four is over.
Oh,
we
no,
should stop thinking,
Josh,
about it. No, I'm taking full blame. I said the top four was over and we should stop talking about it. And now all of a sudden, the vicissitudes of how the season's gone. We had our appalling time. Now the teams above us are having a little bit of a rocky patch. We've been able to capitalise. And, you know, when we talk about the defenders, the bravery of Klopp deciding to go with Williams and Phillips these last 2 games, because it's all or nothing now, has absolutely paid off. So you look at next season, this season's midfield would have been Fabinho, Henderson and Thiago. That would have been your first choice midfield with Virgil and Gomez behind him. And you think, last season, when we won the league, we had the best Liverpool team any of us have ever seen. This season's would have been better. And then we got ripped apart by injuries and by having to accommodate those injuries. So what we've got next season with hopefully a fully fit team could be absolutely spectacular.
Yeah, I love Fabinho, and I think he's been a brilliant player for us, Josh, and you can see how much Thiago loves playing with him, and as a two and as a combination, they just complement each other so well, and it almost allows you to do anything around them, really. So yesterday we go with Curtis Jones, who we thought did okay, although I understand, you know, the sub. It also allows you to go forward if you want, because they are, you know, so combative and so sort of dominant, or you know, it, you know, throws up, you know, questions around, you know, Naby Keita, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, sort of whoever you want to pick. You imagine having a great time.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, really, because Fabinho has, since he's come back in, has been the heart of this Liverpool team, really. Sorry, since he's come back into midfield, he's become, you know, this Liverpool team we've sort of always said have got a lot of leaders, and that's obviously been questioned at times this season. But I think in terms of, you know, leading by example, just by like sheer, you know, force of will and play on the football pitch and being able to put Liverpool in that front foot, Fabinho's been the most important one by a mile. But I actually didn't think he was particularly great yesterday, and I think that's what sort of showed in Liverpool's overall play. I thought, you know, he wasn't able to get us on the front foot as much. He chewed the ball quite a lot. He lost it a few times, but, you know, as Ian said before, there's still an understated job for Fabinho there, which is a thing that doesn't look that good on the telly, and you don't sort of see if you're maybe not in the ground. That kind of thing is that ability to screen the back four and just, you know, put pressure on players when you don't think there's pressure there, relieve pressure on Thiago as well to go and do what he did, and that was the bit that I thought you probably saw more so than Fabinho being on the ball and being the commanding one yesterday, was that he just gave Thiago the freedom to go and be able to do that, and that obviously just, you know, starts paying off Liverpool so late in the game, because look, the goal comes in the sort of circumstance we talked about there where it's the maddest thing ever, but Liverpool were wearing West Brom down for that last 10 minutes and it was all coming through Thiago. And Fabinho was sort of nowhere to be seen in that. He was sort of just sitting off Thiago and letting him be the outball for Thiago if he needed it. But then also, you know, being able to recycle it out to the wings, stretch West Brom apart. I thought Liverpool could have tried maybe to take a few more risks, and Thiago was probably the only player who was sort of willing to do that. But the reason he is able to do that is because of the understated job Fabinho does. But, you know, make no bones about it, he's an absolutely sensational player for Liverpool.
Absolutely, absolutely. I just want to do a quick pause to talk a little bit more about what we've been up to recently. I mentioned before the Jürgen Klopp interview. Thanks a lot to Liverpool Football Club for helping us sort of set that up. Last week, Neil spoke to Jürgen Klopp. I had 20 minutes with him, and it was fascinating. A really good chat. Jürgen's always really open to us. I think trust Neil quite a lot, and Neil got absolutely loads out of him. So that is available to subscribers as both audio and video. The video looks spectacular, so nice ones for the people at LFC TV for helping us out with that and recording their shots there, and it all looks so great. It's one of many great things that have been on the Anfield Wrap subscriber service over the last week or so, not least obviously the post-match stuff from yesterday, which is worth hearing. I watched the post-match pint last night. It was great, and I had the post-match show, the audio version, on the drive-in this morning, and a big smile on my face, and so absolutely brilliant. Loads of other good stuff going on as well in terms of stuff. Last week, Gareth Roberts went over to Manchester to speak to both City and United fans and talk about, you know, from an ownership point of view, what's sort of going on for them, because obviously they both entered the European Super League, but they're very different reactions in terms of the supporter base to the owners. And so Gareth spoke to both audio and video side on that. And then we've got loads of transfer stuff as well, because I know everyone loves that. So there's a gutter special on Bissouma from Brighton, who's been heavily linked at the moment. So we rounded up that. So we think it's a great time to subscribe to the Anfield app. Apparently lots of you do as well, because we've had a really good week. So nice one for that. It's funny, right? You'll like this. Craig messaged me before saying, oh yeah, we've had our best week since Chelsea away earlier in the season. I said, funny enough, it's my best week since Chelsea away. we had a good day, mate.
Oh, what a day that was.
But no, a lot of you have come on board with the excitement, and we really appreciate that, and hopefully lots more of you will as well as we get in to the business end of the season. And it is the business end now, Ian. Ian Salmon, Ian Ryan mentioned it before, that, you know, it's all about making sure this counts for something, and that's what we need to do now. We've been to West Brom, we go to Burnley on Wednesday and need a win. What concerns me slightly is they've got some big lads up front, and I thought the two lads at the back who've been very good for Liverpool, especially Nat Phillips, they did struggle a bit against West Brom. They needed the keeper to bail them out, which happens, but I think for the first time in a while I saw some just bad defending yesterday, to be honest with you, and it sort of a little bit concerned me that a couple of times they got caught wrong side, a couple of times sort of decision making. And look, as Ian Ryan says before, you've got to caveat all this, but what did we think their level was, and how have they surpassed it? And that's fine, but you know, just to be a bit of a Debbie Downer for a little bit before we all bang on about how brilliant Mo Salah is, I think, you know, if I'm Chris Wood or Ashley Barnes sort of watching that, albeit they got snotted 4-0 at the weekend, but if I'm watching that, I'm thinking, oh, I feel I can get at those boys.
Yeah, definitely. It looks like they can be rattled physically, doesn't it? And Williams is he's caught out for their goal. He just steps forward. He just takes that one step forward, and suddenly there's acres of space behind him. And you know, the fact that Big Sam was bigging himself up again, talking about the fact they decided to put balls over the top and into the channels, it's like, well, that's rocket science.
He needs a new job, though, doesn't he?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, because he hasn't decided what he's doing at the end of the season yet. Honest to God, the idea, well, we're going to put the balls into channels between the full backs and the centre backs. Well, yeah, obviously, I'd work that one out. It doesn't take any coaching badges to work that one out, Allardyce. It's they looked like they were rattled a little bit. They coped well in the end. I mean, you know, it wasn't like they were overly exposed again, but it does make you think. Burnley's always a difficult game. It's never as easy, in my mind, it's never as easy as you expect it to be. And the fact that they are going to have 10,000 people behind them for the first time all season is going to change the tone of the game. It could easily turn that place into a bear pit. So it's going to be a difficult game. It's not a foregone conclusion. I would be tempted to move against everything I've said, to move Fabinho into centre-back alongside Phillips, unless Kabak mysteriously becomes fit again in the next 2 days, which I don't think seems likely, given there's no talk of it at all. It could be the one that's just a step too far for Williams. But again, Williams was overall really good yesterday. So, yeah, it's that one mistake, but you think there's always going to be that little doubt, because he is still a fairly slight lad, and Burnley's lads up front, although Williams does look like he's put on weight since his first spell in the team, but he is still a slight lad, and Burnley's lads up front definitely aren't slight lads, and they will. It's that whole thing, if you want to be tested as a footballer, you want to have big rocks attacking you, and that's exactly what he's going to get if he plays on Wednesday night. So I'd be tempted by Fabinho back in the back four.
it's the decision that the manager's had to make all season, Josh, and I think that's why we need to be fair to him. And this isn't about me slaughtering two lads who I think have done really well. It's almost me sort of sticking up for the manager, because everyone's like, I've seen quite a lot of, oh, look, play defenders in defence and play midfield and see what happens. But it's not as easy as that. You know, we rode our luck a couple of times yesterday, and that's fine, and we got away with it. But the manager, you know, has had tough decisions to make all season because of the long injuries that he and Salmon talked about before. And there's no perfect solution. You know, you play Fabinho in midfield, you get everything that you get from him in midfield, but you're having to play lads at the back who, as I say, at times yesterday just didn't look great. Or you can drop Fabinho back there, which Ian Salmon's advocating on Wednesday, which I completely understand, but then you lose him for what Fabinho. He's had these decisions to make all season, Klopp, and they've never been as easy as some people have made out.
No, and this is the thing, isn't it? Is that we can all at times act like this is dead straightforward and like it's black and white, and ultimately we're not the ones who are being paid to manage Liverpool Football Club. There's only one fellow who's being paid that, and he's doing a very, very good job of it. And it's one of the things that I love about Jurgen, is that he sees the nuance and everything. Nothing is just black and white to Jurgen. Everything has got, you know, shades of grey to it and things like that. And this is another one of those scenarios. I thought Reece and that were, they weren't great yesterday, but I sort of thought they looked like inexperienced centre-backs yesterday, which is exactly what they are. So
yeah, it's just little individual things where they called the wrong side and things like that. And there's almost a couple each, really.
Exactly. And I sort of saw it almost as an adrenaline dump, because look, John, we've been playing five-a-side every week, and sometimes I come in the next day and feel like I've got that adrenaline dump after just that one little game which we play for an hour. But so I can't imagine what they've gone through. You know, going to Old Trafford and putting them in the performance that they both put in, which was outstanding, fair, by the way, to then go into the next game where you're probably not expecting, you know, as much of an onslaught, or you're not expecting as big a game, and the game to be coming at you as much as it was at Old Trafford. I can sort of, you know, understand them having a bit of an adrenaline dump. And if I was Jurgen Klopp going into this, I would be starting them both again, because it's the ultimate vote of confidence for both of them. And the one thing this Liverpool team needs now going into these last two games is consistency. And I think if you're talking about what I was saying before about that platform to build off that Fabinho gives you in midfield, then he needs to be in midfield. You know, I said it's not black and white before, but part of the nuance of this Liverpool side that has been shown since Fabinho returned to midfield is that they do need that platform to build off, and they need that sort of screening of the back four. So I'd be going with Nat and Reece again. They're still inexperienced centre-backs who are still going to do inexperienced things at times and make mistakes. But, you know, ultimately, I think that they can be the platform now that we need to have that consistency.
I think that the injuries, Ian, sort of make us, the more recent injuries as opposed to all the other ones that we've had for ages, just sort of, you know, make his mind up for him in a way, in that, okay, well, Jota's out, we'll do the front three for the rest of the season. Do you know what I mean? If he'd have had Milner available, we'd have seen some James Milner, but he hasn't, so we can't. You know, Kabak, you know, it just doesn't look like, you know, he's gonna be about. You know, we'll sort of wait and see. I think, you know, I almost think, like, if he can get anything from anyone else now, it's a bonus, and these are the boys who he's almost going to sort of ride to the end and just see where we go.
Yeah, his hands are behind his back, because he's not had those midfield options either to kind of free up Fabinho to maybe slot back into the defence. I think it is a tricky one, John. And, you know, we talk about relationships before and how important it is off the pitch, on the pitch. You know, these two lads at centre-half, they have no relationship in terms of playing football matches together. So you can see that for the goal where, you know, Phillips has dropped off and Williams has gone, and it doesn't look particularly great. Listen, at the end of the day, I don't think either I've got enough to maybe have a career at Liverpool Football Club, just being perfectly honest about it. But that's not to downplay what they've done.
Yeah.
They've been brilliant. You know, to come in and do what they've done, they've exceeded expectations, I would say. All of us, maybe even Jürgen's as well. You can see it where Jürgen was unsure at, you know, which centre-half to pick. You know, he was picking Williams above Phillips at one point, mm-hmm, because he probably wasn't sure whether Phillips had the ability to step up and deliver the kind of performances he has done. Don't get me wrong, those performances haven't been perfect, but they've been of a level that was better than what any of us probably thought, and that's testament to him. And I think, as far as his development's concerned, he's been working with one of the best coaches in world football, so it'll hopefully enable him to go on and have a really, really good career somewhere. And I think he will, whether it's Premier League level, it might be bottom end of the Premier League. I always thought, looking at him, maybe he was a Championship player, but, well, let's see where that goes. I think for Phillips, he gets he gets a little bit dragged, so he'll maybe go looking for the ball a little bit, and he'll come out of position, that leaves holes. But again, you know, he's not played loads and loads of top-level football. He wins his personal battles, and I think that's what fans, you know, sometimes latch on to when you're watching him play, because he wins a lot in the air. It is very old-school style defender, and people like that. So he does win his battles. He will run through a brick wall for you. There's a lot to be said for that. But I think when you're up against a variety of forwards, so United present different problems than West Brom. Now, I thought he might struggle against United, both centre-halves, but they do all right. Yeah, all right. Yeah. You know, it's not great all the time, but they do all right. Better than all right, to be fair. But then yesterday, West Brom are going direct a lot. Burnley will go direct a lot. And if you're someone like Williams, for instance, if you're a young player, there's not loads of 20-year-old centre-halves ripping it up. And there's a reason for that, because they haven't developed physically, so they do get pushed and pulled everywhere. And if it was me, I would be thinking about Fabinho centre-half. And I don't like that, because I think he's so good in midfield. And he enables Thiago to be the Thiago that we want to see as well. So there's that. But I just think, because of, you're asking William, also physically, you know, ask him to go three games in less than a week. Fair. That's a big ask of a 20-year-old who's not used to elite-level football against these kind of players. So I almost think there's that to take into consideration as well. And that's why I'd probably be going Fabinho and Phillips. But there's no doubt, you know, we've been absolutely cursed at centre-half, because you've got Kabak coming in, you've got this lad Davis, apparently he fucking exists, who knows. So you've got him there as well. And, you know, you can't get either of them near the pitch. And I think Kabak's done pretty well. And there's one or two looking to dig him out at times. But again, he's come in as a young player into a new country. And I think he's probably exceeded expectations to the point where I'd probably pull the trigger on him and do the 18 million and get him in.
He's literally a 20-year-old kid himself, isn't he?
And he's done well, and you're looking for, you know, there's been times where we know Trent's played really well, maybe the last 2 or 3 months, but him and Robertson over the season probably haven't been at their absolute best. So there's that situation as well, and you're chopping and changing the midfield. So these defenders who've come in and done this job, they've had to do it in the most unusual and ridiculous set of circumstances. You know, no centre-half, whether you've been knocking about for 5, 10, 15 years, wants to play in that scenario where it's just chopping and changing all the time. You've got no idea who's going to be next to you. There's times when the goalkeepers had to come out as well for reasons that we know about. So really, really difficult for those lads. They've handled themselves, you know, pretty well, it has to be said. But, you know, at the start, as I said, I don't think either will have a career at Liverpool. I kind of stand by that. I think there'll be good careers for both of those lads, Williams and Phillips, but I don't necessarily think it's at Liverpool Football
Club. The other thing I would say as well, John, just to sort of, you know, round off that argument, is that Williams was playing in the Conference last season. So if you, I know Ashley Barnes and Chris Wood are a sort of level ahead of that, but if you're talking, you know, purely in terms of strikers giving you a sheer physical battle, there's not many leagues in the world where you're getting as much of a physical battle in alehouse strikers as you do down in the Conference. So I don't have many doubts about Phillips going into the, sorry about Williams going into this game, and I think it's absolutely perfectly suited to Nat Phillips, let's be honest.
Oh, I bet he'd be loving
definitely
this.
Yeah,
be fucking loving it.
Although he completely missed the header, didn't he? Yeah. Like, where were you in the second half, was it? He came over to Reece Williams' side of fair play. Reece Williams came him down the banks for it as well, just flew over and completely missed it. Less of that and more of the big booming headers. It also helps lads at the back if you can protect them well, Ian, and stop things coming to them. And I thought, you know, we go 1-0 down and just didn't start great. And I think, you know, if you're thinking about Jürgen, what he would be saying as well, he'd be saying, well, why aren't we at it? Why aren't we better stopping the balls? Why is it? You see the first goal, it's a soft free kick. I don't think it was a free kick, actually, but we don't clear it greater than it's coming back in. And, you know, I think, you know, a way of protecting whoever's at centre-half is just by starting with that, with a bit better intensity. And it's both games we've gone 1-0 down in the last few days. You can't keep doing that, and I think that's what maybe you're going to be saying to them, is always, whoever it is a player in the centre half, maybe just give them a bit less to do early on.
Yeah, take the ball the other end of the pitch. And it is we didn't start with intensity against United, and yesterday's was kind of obviously at some point we're gonna have to go on to the fact that we got away with one there. We got away with the fact that there was a second goal conceded. This time, getting away with it, we took advantage of the fact we got away with it, which we haven't done. But the lead up to their goal, we were playing a little bit of head tennis on the left-hand side, just up from the left-back position. And it was kind of like, we've conceded from playing head tennis there a couple of times this season. We're just not dealing with it at all. Maybe that is just one.
It reminded me of the opener against Everton, you know, where it's just bouncing around and suddenly the boom, there's one round the corner and Richarlison scored. It reminded me of that.
Maybe there's a really call for just get rid of that point. just get it down the other end and then we'll deal with it when it comes back to us, because there's not that many times it can come back at us. No, the intensity, but then you've got the problem that we are, you know, Jürgen's made the calls to play with our two centre-backs and playing within the moments, which you can do short-term, but we couldn't have done for 4 months. And we are looking in short-term, we've got to play another two games in the next, 5 days, 6 days now. So we are playing three games in a week, four games in the space of 9 days.
Yeah.
It's a ridiculous burden. So if we're asking the team to be really intense.
Yeah, it's a fair point.
We can only ask them to do it in bursts. Mm. And against United, they did it in bursts for 20 minutes before half-time and 20 minutes after half-time, and then tried to sit back a little bit before and after that. So you can't ask for 90 minutes of intensity. So we're going to have to take risks a little bit on that. And I've no idea what points I'm reaching for now.
No, no, it's a fair one. It's a fair one because I'm saying, you know, I want them sort of more intense, and you're quite rightly pointing out, you know, how many games they sort of played this season.
We've got Nelson through the next 180 minutes, basically.
Yeah. Maybe we should just play in best like Barcelona and Wimbledon did last night to go 3-0 up after 15 minutes or whatever.
That'd be useful.
they are playing in best nailed, let me tell you. I enjoyed that game last night. I mean, it's two ways of looking at it, really, isn't it, Josh? There's the idea of, well, if you're coming from behind, then you're showing a lot of strength, and, you know, you'd rather that than sort of the opposite. I don't know. I just wish we were starting games sort of a little bit more assured than we are at the moment.
Yeah, I think, you know, against United, they've sort of shown this season how good they are at coming from behind, so it almost posed them a different problem that they went ahead instead of going behind. But, you know, against teams like West Brom and Burnley, that's basically what they're set out to do, isn't it, is get an early goal and then sit back and defend for their lives. So there's only so many times you can give teams that, and I'll probably throw Palace into that as well, because obviously we've got them last game of the season. There's only so many times you can give those teams that advantage, and look, it is an advantage for them to be able to just, you know, get back into a shape and sit like that. And Liverpool have a load of players there. You know, we've talked about Thiago already. Gini Wijnaldum will probably come back into this game, I imagine, and start. He's another one who can sort of pick the lock. And then obviously the front three who seem to be sort of, you know, starting to fire on all cylinders again now. They've got players there who can pick that lock, but there's only so many times you're going to get the opportunity to do that. And Burnley in particular, we all know they've always been classed as our bogey team, and we've actually got a quite good record against them recently, but, you know, we're not usually letting them go a goal ahead. We're usually starting and firing on all cylinders, and that's almost what I think we wanted to see return from this Liverpool side. You mentioned about the Barcelona women sort of scoring in bursts, and that was the main thing we used to associate with this Jurgen Klopp team, wasn't it? They would start quick and they'd get a few goals advantage on you, and maybe that was what we thought we were going to see again. But it's still been quite pragmatic, and you sort of wonder going into these last two games whether the adrenaline and the momentum of what's happened over the past few games starts to build, and maybe we do start to see it, something that's a bit more free flowing, because Burnley and Palace are both teams that we've scored a lot of goals against as well, as much as their teams who want to, you know, nick that early goal and sit back. They are both teams that Liverpool scored plenty of goals against. So I think I'm mainly just petitioning for our outfield lads to be hitting the back of the net, as much as I loved our goalie doing it.
There was a lot of talk, John, before the West Brom game about how they'd approach it, because, you know, they've got nothing to play for, they're down, all that kind of stuff. But I think you've got to appreciate that Liverpool Football Club's a scalp for anyone, and I don't think you get necessarily the free ride that maybe one or two other clubs might get, where there's nothing to play, because people want to beat Liverpool. You've seen it this season when teams have had positive results, it means something. You know, there's players who'll have earned a transfer on the back of a good performance against this football club. So
is that why teams keep beating Everton at Goodison Park? Is it the same, like, gravitas?
Exactly the same.
Or do they
exactly
just shite?
So I don't expect, you know, Burnley to turn one in like they did against Leeds, for instance. Maybe I'm wrong, but it just doesn't feel like it will be that much of a stroll in the park, because I think it will mean something to these clubs to try and stop Liverpool, the Premier League champions, from getting back into the Champions League. That's a thing. So I don't think there's any free rides here. I think Palace last game will be another tough task. You know, Benteke's all of a sudden found fucking
form
from nowhere. You know, Josh talked about the front three there. I was a little bit disappointed in Bobby and Mane, to be honest. I thought, you know, Mohamed Salah continues to do Mohamed Salah things and just score goals at really, really important moments. But, you know, Mane was toiling. He was struggling for me. It's bouncing off him a little bit. You see it for the kind of Salah goal, he puts a ball through to Bobby that's not ideal, and it bounces off Firmino a little bit. And I thought he was another one who was maybe guilty of giving the ball away a lot in the first half. So I've absolutely taken the point about the intensity thing. I think it's hard to keep going for those games in such a short space of time. But I think what you do want to do is just retain possession. You know, you haven't got to be intense for the whole 90 minutes, but what you have got to do is look after the football. And I think there's been times, certainly against West Brom, where we were just giving it away far too easy. You know, Andy Robbo in the first half must have given it away about 4 or 5 times. It was ridiculous. So stuff like that, they've got to make sure there's no gimmies, no easy ones on Wednesday night, because it is one hell of a football match in significance. It's massive. You know, it's so important that we are back in the Champions League next season. And I think, you know, you want to see some of those players I've just mentioned right at it from the start. You know, whether it's intense or not, just doing the basics right. And as I say, I think if you do that, it looks after itself.
Yeah. I want to finish on salary, but before we do, what did you make of Mane and Firmino?
Firmino, I think, was a bit sketchy. Mane, there were glimpses. You could see that it was coming back to him a little. As that little burst for a run he makes.
Oh, I know which one you mean.
And
yeah.
For the goal, the fact that he may lose the ball, but the recovery to get it across to Salah was... That was what set the goal up for us. Mm. You know, it's obviously the goal itself is a work of genius, but the assist is important there, because he does well to recover in front of literally about 6 defenders to get it across to Mo. So I think there's flashes there, and his head wasn't going. He didn't look like he was inside his own head, and he has done for quite a while. So I think that could be the beginning of a turning point.
Josh?
I mentioned before about them firing all cylinders. Obviously, didn't mean in the goals department in that game yesterday. But I thought Mane was better. It's one of the better games that I've seen him play. I take the point about him still looking a bit like he's inside his own head. I think part of the issue that we've got now in terms of the Liverpool squad, and it might be fixed when we've got the more solid foundation next season, is Firmino playing against lower block teams, because lower block teams not only seem to just sit in a shape, but they seem to have a bit of a plan for Firmino as well, in that they know how you know where they can sort of let him base himself in the pitch to make him not a threat. And you saw it again yesterday. I thought he was just dropping too deep at times to try and get on the ball and try and make things happen, and that's almost where he's least effective, is when he's too far away from the goal. So maybe it's just a case of next season Jota starts more of those games instead of Firmino against those kind of teams, but you'd like to think that Liverpool have sort of got a new plan for that going into next season.
Balls, God, if he doesn't hit the post, we're not even having this conversation.
Yeah, no, that is a good point. That's one that they got away with, to be fair. Okay, let's do it. Mo Salah. Ian, I don't know what I love more, his goal or his celebration for the winner. He showed in both instances just how much he wants Champions League football this season, next season, for Liverpool and himself. He fucking loves this football club.
He wants it badly, doesn't he? You see that from the reaction, as you said, you know, the Alisson winner, he was absolutely delighted. And, you know, that doesn't happen if we don't get the Mohamed Salah goal early on, because there's basically nothing to play for. You know, you can imagine heads would have gone down if we're going into that last 5 and it's 1-0. But again, he's pulled it out the bag, John. You know, no right to score from there. What is he, 22 yards?
First time.
No backlift, just takes it first time. And as I say, in a season of a lot of shit, he has been the kind of shining light, hasn't he? Don't get me wrong, I'm sure there's times where he's looked at certain football matches. You know, you think of Real Madrid, and he'll have gone home that night thinking, I should have done better, because I'm better than that. I should have put Liverpool ahead and had more of an impact on the game. So there will be moments where he himself will know maybe he could have done a bit more. But looking at his overall season, those numbers are phenomenal. What is he, 30 goals now? Mm. 30 goals in a team that's just been chopped and changed. It's not played well. We've had, 9 defeats across the season. Without Mohamed Salah, I don't know where this football club would be this season. We'd be absolutely nowhere. So, you know, testament to him again. He has been phenomenal for large part of this campaign. And he's probably the only one, certainly out the front three, who's got anywhere near the level you expect. He's just a phenomenal footballer. And it's amazing looking at some of those teams of the season that we're knocking about last week that he wasn't in there. He's so underappreciated. It's ridiculous, to be honest, when there's footballers like Marcus Rashford, for instance, who are getting in teams ahead of him. It's an absolute nonsense. It's bias. And listen, I think even as Liverpool fans, you can appreciate good footballers, whether they play for your club or not. But there's no doubt in my mind that Mohamed Salah is one of the finest the Premier League's seen, to be honest. And you can have a debate about where does he sit on the Liverpool list. We've got a lot to choose from, to be fair. Yeah. There's plenty to choose from. But in terms of having that kind of single-mindedness, I've not seen many better, John, to be honest, because he has got that individual part to his game where you can see it means a lot to him to do well as an individual. And that's fine, because I think strikers throughout history, they have got that selfishness to the game. You know, they want to score goals. You know, Harry Kane's the same. They want to score goals. They want to win big football matches for themselves and for the team. I'm absolutely fine with that. He's been a phenomenal addition to this football club. You know, the 30-odd million they paid, it's pocket change, isn't it? Let's be honest.
Yeah.
And you hope that he's still at this football club for a number of years, because, as I say, without him this season, we'd be languishing.
Yeah, when he delivers for himself, he delivers for his team, Ian, and you can talk about selfishness, but if he's scoring goals, you know, when the Reds win, we all win and all that. And he's currently joined the top scorer with Harry Kane. I hope he gets it, because if he does, it means he scored a few more goals for Liverpool, and yeah, we'll be in a better position to come top four.
It's the fact that we are hopefully going to finish fourth will rest on what Salah's done for us this season.
Yeah.
Because without his goals, we would be mid-table at best, because everything else has been so poor. For that long stretch from January to, mid-April, we were so ineffective that without Mo doing what Mo does brilliantly, we'd have been nowhere. So the fact that we can finish fourth and he's Golden Boots winner would be an incredible thing for him. I think as a footballer, he's given me as much joy as any footballer I've ever watched in my life, and possibly more than most. I love watching him play. He keeps doing the unexpected. He doesn't have the sheer madness of Suarez. My dad had watched everybody from Lidl onwards, and he always stood by the idea that my dad didn't see Mo play for us, but he stood by the idea that Suarez was the most gifted player he'd ever seen play for Liverpool. I think Mo's better than Suarez in terms of what he does for the club. Suarez could do the madness, but Mo is... This is where, as Ian said, we've been spoilt as a club because we have so many legends. If you're a Spurs fan, okay, it's Harry Kane, and then it's Jimmy Greaves, and then...
Clive Allen.
Yeah.
Lineker.
Yeah, it's
a bit until he fucked them off.
Yeah, and it's not... They haven't got that same level of, you know, that sheer genius of Dalglish, Rush, Owen, Fowler, Torres, Suarez.
We've been blessed.
We've been blessed. And Mo is absolutely at the top table of all that. He's our third fastest goal scorer in 200 games. And it was Hunt, and I've forgotten who the other player was, but it was mid-50s, early 60s, the other player who scored more than Mo has in the first 200. He's a phenomenal footballer, and anybody who's suggested at any point this season that we should sell him in order to buy a Sancho or an Mbappe, I'd love Sancho or Mbappe in the team, but to lose Mo to facilitate another player coming in is just, it's ridiculous.
Josh, last word on Mo Salah.
I'm struggling with words, to be honest. We talked about this on the weekender, and any sort of superlatives you can think to throw at Mo Salah now have already been done. And I think, look, every single one of us as football fans and as Liverpool fans are a bit guilty of overthinking Mo Salah, I think, to some extent, and that he's almost a victim of the way that the coverage is around football now, that it's constant and it's running all the time, is that, like, it seems like there has to be a constant conversation around him. But, you know, both the Ians have mentioned it there, that the goals he scored for Liverpool this season are so important. It doesn't matter what his body language is saying, whether you think he's selfish or not. There's a lot of revisionism that goes on around football as well, and we can act like, you know, Fowler wasn't selfish, or Owen wasn't selfish, or Torres, Gerrard, you know, they were all selfish to some degree, and they had to be, because that is literally how you grab a game by the scruff of the neck, and that is how you drag your team out of the mire, is sometimes by doing it yourself. And
sorry, yeah, Josh, just to interrupt, Paisley tells Rush to be more selfish.
Yeah,
it's what reinvents Ian Rush's game.
Yeah, and that's that. I'd imagine Jurgen Klopp probably had similar conversations with Mo Salah. I think that it looked like those times this season. I think it might have been earlier this season. It's gone on for about a decade this season. but where Mo was almost in his own head and thought, you know, maybe I should be passing to Mane more, because if anything boots off, and all the sort of media coverage around it. But I hope in those times that Jurgen did turn around to him and said, lad, just do what comes naturally to you, and what comes naturally to him is scoring goals. And you saw that yesterday, because it is the most natural finish, as Ian said, you know, to hit it first time the way he does, to stroke into the bottom corner. It's one of many goals he'll score for Liverpool this season, and all of them have been so important.
That's right. Listen, the Reds are on the march. The Anfield Wrap's on the march. TheAnfieldWrap.com/subscribe if you want more. As I say, the post-match content last night's worth the money alone, but you've got a little Jurgen Klopp interview to enjoy as well. And obviously, over the next week, we're going to be enjoying best we can. I'm not sure I enjoyed loads of that game yesterday, but I certainly enjoyed the end. But yeah, hopefully, two more big wins and hopefully Champions League football. But yeah, the Anfield Wrap will be covering it best we can. So do come and join us. TheAnfieldWrap.com/subscribe. But in the meantime, thanks a lot to both Ian's and to Josh. Up the Reds. Sports Social Podcast Network.